Okay, thank you, members. Welcome to the Policy and Governance Committee meeting of Antrim and Newton Abbey Borough Council on Tuesday, the 5th of February 2019. Members are reminded that this meeting is being audio recorded and it is therefore important to ensure that your microphone light is switched on correctly before any comments are made and switched off when you have finished speaking. In order to avoid disruption to proceedings, may I request that everyone present ensures all mobile and electronic devices are switched on to silent mode. Okay, members, are there any apologies? I have Alderman Agnew. Okay. Any declarations of interest? Okay, members. So I would like to welcome Catherine Burke, Gillian Bingham and Tom Sullivan. And you have 10 minutes for your presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, and good evening, everybody. My name is Catherine Burke. I am the Chartered Society of Physiotherapists Chair of the Northern Ireland Board. Gillian Bingham is a member of our Executive Committee, and Tom Sullivan is a staff member at the CSP. He is our Policy Affairs and Policy Manager. We also have with us Siobhan McCauley, who will be our incoming chair within the next few weeks. We really welcome this opportunity to speak to you this evening because I feel that we have common interests in promoting physical activity, and we'd like to suggest some ideas for collaborative working. So if you want to look at the screen, we have a major health concern, public health concern, in terms of physical inactivity. And the effects that is having. Our population is living longer, and many of them are living with long-term conditions, both physical and mental. The Council have obviously identified this and included it in your community strategy, but it's also something that the physiotherapy profession want to tackle in our campaign. The role of physiotherapists is very important in this, in that we are experts in physical activity, but also experts in the conditions that affect many people who have difficulty engaging in physical activity. And all the evidence shows that physical activity of all different sorts is beneficial in terms of both mental health and physical health. But of course, there are barriers to that. For many people, it's a fear or it's pain itself. It could be fatigue, lack of motivation, lack of time, and those create a number of barriers for different people in terms of engaging in the amount of physical activity that is recommended. The Chief Medical Officer recommends 150 minutes of moderate physical activity for everybody throughout the week. So to tell you a little bit about the CSP campaign, which is called Love Activity, Hate Exercise, the question mark is to denote the fact that a lot of people don't think of themselves as somebody who exercises, but if you talk about activity, they're more ready and willing to listen. What I think might be helpful is if we show you a short video which sort of explains our campaign. It takes about a minute and a half, and then I'll talk about the sort of things that I think might be useful in terms of what we as a profession can provide to the Council and what we're hoping the Council might be able to do with us.
We hear it over and over. Exercise is good for you. But what if you have a condition that makes you dread the thought of it?
So hopefully that gives you a flavour of the campaign that the Chartered Society of Physiotherapy is promoting at the moment. We've already promoted a number of case studies on Twitter for people with different conditions. These are just some examples. Somebody who has maybe a pelvic floor problem or somebody who's had arthritis. There's quite a wide range of resources available through the CSP, and we've brought some samples that you can have a look at. For example, even simple things like posters and bookmarks. And over on the right of the screen, you'll see the Get Active Guide, which is an 8-page brochure promoting activity for people with various conditions. So we are very aware that within Antrim and Newton Abbey Borough Council, you are already promoting the fact that people should be involved in physical activity because it helps them both physically and mentally. And I know from your brochures that you're particularly concerned about the ageing population so that our citizens can live longer and independently. And we would have resources that would assist in helping you in that campaign or in that strategy. In addition, we're very aware that in Newton Abbey Borough Council, 19% of the population have a long-term health problem, and that equates to 19% of people with fair, bad or very bad health, which is a very large number of your residents. And again, we have brochures and resources that help people who have a long-term condition. So what we would like to propose to you this evening is that the CSP could offer you some resources, and we have thought about how that might be distributed. For example, we can give you free access to a high quality suite of resources that can be tailored for the council, that you can put your own council name on and so on. We would like to support the council in your community planning and priorities with regards to physical activity and promoting that. And we would like to provide you with links to physiotherapy professionals with expertise in physical activity, and that can even be done with regards to specific conditions. One of the things we have arranged recently is that we have love activity champions within each council area. So moving on to things that we thought might be practical ideas. We would be keen for you to endorse and promote the campaign that we're running. We would be keen for you to disseminate some of the information that we have available. For example, that we thought that the printed copy of the brochure could be included in the residents' magazine, Borough Life. We can provide you with links to the CSP campaign through our the website, and if those can be linked onto the council website, that would be an excellent way of collaboration. And we also thought maybe distributing some of our resources through council facilities, perhaps in leisure centres, would be helpful. And we would also be willing to be involved in an event, either with council staff or a community event, in terms of promoting physical activity. So I'd just like to thank you for your time in listening to me this evening, and we'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It was very informative and helpful. Any questions, members? Or comments? Don't be shy, it's not like you. Alderman Smith.
Thank you, Chairman. Just the free access, could you elaborate on the free access you talk about? Because I hear people talking about they want to go to physiotherapy and they find it very hard to get it. So you talk about free access, could you elaborate a wee bit on that? So.
In terms of access to physiotherapy, I presume you're talking about waiting lists and so on? Okay. Well, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there is a programme going on in terms of a first contact practitioner, where a number of physiotherapists are now moving into GP practices to help reduce their wait times. And therefore, now those pilots are being run in in Derry and also in South and West and in West Belfast. So it hasn't moved into the Antrim area yet, but that's a rolling programme and hopefully access will improve in your area. But I suppose this is maybe slightly different, that you're talking about access to treatment, whereas we're maybe talking about moving more into the public health arena to promote physical activity in addition to treatment.
Yeah, I suppose, as Catherine has said, the whole reason for the campaign is to look in a broader sense of increasing physical activity across the whole population. So not necessarily about direct access to physiotherapists, but physiotherapists being a point of contact for the dissemination and the promotion of this campaign. But as Catherine has said, the First Contact Physiotherapy programme is rolling out across as part of the transformation agenda with health and social care services generally. There are three pilots going on at the moment, which are co-terminous with the GP federations in those areas, with the expectation that eventually those models of multidisciplinary care will roll out to all 17 GP federations, which will include the whole of Northern Ireland. But also the specific purpose, to a certain extent, of this campaign is to target those people with long-term conditions and provide them with bespoke advice and guidance around how they can increase their physical activity. And it's been shown that even moderate increases in physical activity for people with long-term conditions can have a significant effect on their health and independence and actually reduce costs across the health and social care system.
Could I just say that one of the biggest problems with people with long-term conditions is that they get secondary complications due to having lack of activity. And I know the council have put in a lot of good work in the facilities that they have got in order to promote people with disabilities. And I suppose if you look at the long-term conditions generally, whether it's mobility, hearing, sight, etc., you've already gone some way to actually addressing those needs. But I suppose what we would be looking at is to prevent those secondary complications that people end up in hospital or requiring very intensive treatments through the medical system. And it's trying to get people to promote the fact that physical activity can be done by everyone and anyone, and physiotherapy are the key people who can cross those barriers, whether it's sport, physical activity within their school, within their health condition, and also to follow through, I suppose, with a health passport for individuals. And that's really what we would be looking at, to try and do a lot of preventive work as opposed to always treatment, but actually to look at that preventative system and to look at that within the council context and within the context of the long-term conditions that you hold within the council.
Are you coming off, Alderman Smith?
Just a comment, Chairman. I think we'd only be too glad to help with the rollout of it. I'm sure it fits well with our agenda for the council.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Hollis.
Thank you very much. What can be done for where there's a long-term condition that physiotherapy really can be dangerous for conditions? I haven't got a dog and I don't want one. I haven't got a bicycle and I don't want one. I haven't got other things there and I don't want them. But where life is just okay going on without having to extend yourself. You talk there about secondary. I'm about 50. Down the line, but I find that even with some physiotherapy, you come out worse than what you went in, and it's time to stop. It's not for everyone.
I think I would say the one thing with physiotherapy is where there's a grey area where treatment stops and where personal ownership and activity begins, but also the two do merge together, and I suppose you have to be realistic at what the outcomes you wish to achieve, and also the goals you wish to achieve, not only from the patient perspective, but also from the therapist perspective. And I think that's key in having a full assessment and being able to be given accurate advice as to what you can do. And some people, I would agree with you. You don't want to have a dog to do something with, but there's maybe some other activity that you could do within that context of at home, when you're at home, that you can actually do on a regular basis. Because I think the key thing for activity is it's building it into your daily life. It's not having something to do that's extra. You want to be able to mould it into your daily life so that you're not having to take on something extra and it doesn't become an extra burden. And I think that is really important. And that's where physiotherapists, maybe with a lot of discussion with yourself, for example, or someone with a long-term condition, can actually step back and say, well, actually, that exercise is not for you. We need to give you something else. And I think that's really important to have that conversation with your physio.
Okay, thank you.
And I think, just to add to that, it's about providing the right support where it's needed. For some people, what they do need is hands-on treatment, but for many people, they don't need that. And then this is another course of action in terms of helping people manage their own condition and supporting them in doing that without providing hands-on treatment necessarily, if that's not appropriate.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Dunlop.
First of all, thank you for your presentation. You talk about specific needs of individuals. How do you propose offering these services, identifying their needs? Is there going to be, have you got something in place where, for example, you know, across the board, we're talking, we don't know how many people. Do you foresee a waiting list in this, and if you have any way of curtailing that waiting list, I would be happy to hear a few of your answers.
Are you referring to treatment now, or are you looking at physical activity as a prevention?
What I'm basically meaning is, yes, you're offering a service, I assume, yes, you're offering a service. I'm asking if somebody comes with a specific need, you know, what way would you determine that need? Will these people have to, will it be like a 12-week program, or be a one-off, or just how do you plan to roll all out?
I think at this stage, we're not coming to you with a package other than the campaign that we have already prepared with the materials that we've prepared. But what we would like to do is to open a dialogue with the council to see what sort of a package could be put together, what resources we have, what needs you feel your council members, your council residents have. And it may be a class-based thing, or it might be an event-based thing. But that's really open for discussion. I think what we need to be careful about is promising something that we couldn't deliver, so we're not here to do that, but we would like to open the discussion to see if you have a specific need and then see how we could assist you in addressing that. Does that answer your question?
Much of the data that we've been looking at, and certainly when I've been speaking to people within the Health Trust as well, obviously therapists are thin on the ground, and there is a priority within that for treatment. But I think what we are looking at is to do quite a bit of preventative work and to give people the tools for them to go out and take on the activity and make it part of their daily life. But it's also speaking to your GP and asking for those referrals as required. But again, this may need to be a wider conversation within the trusts and also within the council to see where maybe you feel that we would need to target in order to put some of those resources from within your health trust area as well.
Sorry, could I just add, I suppose a lot of the information you already have and have in your community plan, in terms of 19% of residents in the borough have at least one long-term condition. And I suppose it's basically about exploring how to target those groups more effectively in terms of the campaign, and also to consider how the council can use the resources that you have that we wouldn't have to get that message across to as many residents as possible, in the hope and expectation that they can increase their levels of activity. But the information, as we said, is very specific and bespoke to certain conditions, and hopefully that will resonate with them. They will see that someone with arthritis or with a particular condition, this is what we would advise in terms of them increasing their physical activity levels.
Okay, thank you. Are we all have enough members? Any other questions or comments? Okay, so thank you once again for your presentation, your time. Thank you. That's great. Okay, members, so moving on to items for decision then. Item 4.1, the filming policy. I'm just going to bring Andrea in. Yes, sorry.
Chairman, could we not look at some sort of resolution of moving forward, working with these people here? What is his yes like, sort of? Like, give us some sort of plan there, so I think we should work together, maybe, and developing something that fits in the community plan.
That's fine, that's, yeah, we can, yeah, so that'll be brought back to another, next committee.
Can I say anything? Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, Alderman Smith, we can maybe do a short report for the next committee, but certainly in the meantime, there was some very practical things there we could do. Certainly through our website, social media platforms, internally with staff on the staff app promoting this good stuff, and also we can maybe factor into the next Borough Life an article specific to some of this information that was shared this evening. Absolutely. Yes, yes.
So, item 4.1 then, filming policy. I'm just going to bring Andrea in.
Thank you, Chair. So, members, this policy really has been drafted as a framework for us to consider all the requests that would come to Council. It's positive in the sense that it's the requests are an opportunity for us to showcase all the beautiful places and spaces that we have and the various facilities that we're very proud to have. It also is a great opportunity and to enhance the tourism interest across the piece as well. We do have mainly requests from local news broadcasts, some from time to time from fill-in productions, and it's a framework for us then to apply for all of those requests. There is a two-tiered system within the policy, which is tier one being the more straightforward requests from local news broadcasters, maybe community groups, etc. And tier two would be for film productions from small production companies right through to major. And then there's a pricing structure to reflect the size of the production companies. So for the small, it ranges from £50 an hour to the very large, up to £500 an hour. So there would be income generated from a policy like this. It's fairly detailed in terms of the request that would come forward, and that's appended just to give an outline as to the information that we would seek before there would be any approval. And also there would be a signed film and location agreement so that all the appropriate insurances, etc., would be in place before anything actually went forward. So there's a lot of checks and balances that would also fall in behind this, members. For the, goes without saying, but it's included in the report, members, and also the policy in terms of members being kept fully informed around any film production requests, however small they may be. So that would be before you this evening for consideration, members, and approval.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Councillor Holland?
I'm a little bit concerned about that murder that was taking place over in Belfast at the weekend, that for about 30 seconds or 45 seconds, it highlighted on Rathfern Estate, which had nothing at all to do with it. And yet, because there's murals there, these people in the news just hone in and just sit showing that what it is. It lets people down. People don't want it. If you're going to talk on someone from the news, go to the area where it happens and leave our area out of it. This has happened quite a few times, and I think it's time it did stop. And sometimes I'm concerned that councillors are very quick to jump on, to give their views to news broadcasts, and it doesn't help the situation at all. I don't know how you would control it, but
Okay, thank you. Councillor Hollis?
Chair, I think it's a very good policy. But I think regards to the head of service, who would that be? And how many, have we had many requests for film crews lately?
Yeah, through you, Chair, Alderman Smith, the Tier 1 would go to, for example, we had one recently, which was the head of leisure, because there was a local news that wanted to go in and see all the good work that the, I think it was the over 55s club was doing, maybe in the 6 Mile Leisure Centre or the Valley. It was either one of the two centres. So that's an example of a Tier 1 request. And so long as the people in the class are happy and we manage that whole thing well, there generally would be no issue, and it promotes the programmes that the council offers. In terms of film production, we have had some in the past, and if they're very large, they tend to have some agreements in place as to when it's made public that they're going to be having filmed or known to film in a location, simply because if it gets out at the time they're doing it, it can create a lot of mayhem if there's any familiar faces or famous people involved in it. So there's a bit of management around the very major productions. It wouldn't happen very often. They're usually much smaller.
Just for that, would that come back in confidence then for us as well, or whenever we'd be told about it, or?
It could be, Alderman Smith, if it would be necessary. You know, otherwise, what we'd be doing is, if the requests are such that the corporate leadership team could assess it and there would be low risk to the council, no reputational issues, and it would be a safe production to have, then it would be working with the film crew and the time and around when information would be released so as not to compromise the terms of the agreement.
Okay, thank you. So the recommendation is that the filming policy be approved. Do we have a proposer? Councillor Webb?
I propose.
Thank you. Councillor Girvan?
Seconded.
All agreed, members? Agreed. Thank you. Item 4.2 then, the implementation of local government resilience resourcing model. I'm just going to bring Sandra in this one.
Thank you, Chair. The paper is to seek agreement from members to implement a new local government resourcing model by agreeing to the principles that are set out in the service level agreement. Back in June, this council approved the resourcing model for civil contingencies function, and this was approved by all councils at that time, but that was subject to confirmation of sustainable funding from the department. That now is in place. So there is £680,000 in place for the next 2 years, 2020 and 2021. So the model seeks to provide assurance for councils that multi-agency plans are in place, and these complement our local arrangements, that there is sufficient resilience around emergencies should they arise, and that there's adequate governance around that process. And it also ensures that we align best with other organisations in terms of our response. So the model is laid out within your papers in terms of the regional team with the regional officer and also the manager in place. Jones, Cassidy and Brett and Belfast City Council Legal Services have been involved in drawing up the service level model, and they have advised that TUPE will apply to officers who are transferring across into the new model. Should there be a shortfall, and it says this within the service level agreement, then that will be met in equal amounts by the councils who are participating in this. So recommendation is that council would approve the terms set out in service level agreement.
Thank you. Recommendation is before you, members. Do I have a proposer? Alderman Smith.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask you a question on it. More so, regardless of the resilience programme, if there was a, say, like the flooding we had here last year, how would that feed into it as such, or what would, how it affect this council as such, or is it designed for that or not, or just maybe?
Yes, in terms of the events that happened during the summertime of last year, the Northern Regional Group were involved in that process. So this really is just, we anticipate that it will be the same staff who will transfer across into this new model, but certainly it would be similar to the support that we received during that emergency of the summer in 2018. Through the chair, it really is just putting a model around that and putting the governance around it. I suppose originally that model hadn't been in place, but now as we've moved to the 11 councillors, it's ensuring that there's governance and that there's actually staffing within that with roles and responsibilities, and that all of that is funded through the department. So it's ensuring that the governance is in place around that process.
Happy enough, Alderman Smith? Do you have a... Pardon? Hopefully we won't. We won't have to. Do we have a proposer, members? Oh, Councillor McWilliam, thank you, and Councillor Dunlop, thank you. All agreed? Okay, members, and we'll move to the supplementary then, which is item 4.3. It's before you in the pink, if you want to have a wee glance over that. There's a recommendation that the draft response be approved. Sandra, do you want to speak on that? Sandra, I'll speak on that, and then we'll...
Thank you, Chair. So I appreciate that this information is just before you this evening. So it's the pink documentation that's on at your place. So there's information around the actual consultation itself, and then there's a draft response on behalf of Council. So it's a fairly short consultation, and essentially it's one that the Department have put out around the local government pension scheme. And the issue is that when the valuation of the pension scheme happened by the actuary in March 2016, there was a breach of a cost cap, the employer's cost cap, and it had moved outside of a range that was allowable within the scheme. And that is laid out on page 4 of your papers at 1.2. So it just details that breach and how it arose. So the body met then to look at what the different options were to bring the scheme back into line, and they looked at a number of alternatives, but the one that they are recommending is around the accrual rate for members of the scheme. So they're changing the accrual rate for members from 1/49th to 1/43.5, and for survivals from 1/160 to 1/142. So essentially what that means is that the accrual rate for members improves, so potentially there will be a better pension for those people. And I suppose the other side of that is that that potentially could lead to an increase in costs for council in the fullness of time. I suppose the other point to make or to put before you is 1.9 within the consultation document, which is on page 5, where they say that this proposal will not adversely affect any member of the local government pension scheme. In fact, they say that it will benefit members. However, we would be unclear just exactly that they have done all of the work that's required in to ensure that nobody would be adversely affected in relation to this change. So then if we look at the proposed response on behalf of Council, the first item then within the response is around the cost of the scheme. So what we're saying is that whilst we say we would see that the accrual rate means a benefit for members and survivors of the scheme, we are concerned about the future impact in terms of the employer's contributions. The contribution rate for 2019-20 will be 20%, but potentially by this change there is potential that that could go up, and that would put more pressure on council budgets. The second point that we're making on the response is the time frame around it. The legislation for this has still not been made, and yet it's due to be implemented from the 1st of April 2019. So we feel that there's insufficient time for council and for scheme members to understand and prepare for those changes. And then finally, in terms of that clause 1.9, where they state that no member will be adversely affected, we would be of the view that that has not been fully tested, and that there potentially is some categories of members within the scheme who could be adversely impacted. And due to the tight time frame, as we've alluded to, they will have insufficient time really to understand what those changes might mean for them and make any or plan for any changes that they might need to make to their arrangements. So in conclusion, what we're saying is that we would propose that the outworkings of the scheme would be reviewed in terms of the impact on different categories of members within the scheme, and that the implementation would be delayed until those impacts are tested, communicated and understood by all stakeholders. And obviously, this response would have to be ratified by Council at the end of the month, but the limit for return of our response was the 15th, so that's why it's before this committee tonight, but obviously subject to ratification at full Council at the end of the month.
Okay, thank you, Sandra. Any comments, members? Councillor Wilson?
Thank you. You talk about in terms of potential adverse impact. Is there any, I suppose, examples that you can come to mind of maybe an employee being impacted from these changes? And also, you'd state there's the potential of the employer's contributions going up. How real, I suppose, is the potential? You know, what's that, I suppose, based on? Thanks.
In terms of the first point, I suppose pension arrangements are personal to all employees and councillors. So council would not be aware of all the personal circumstances that people have in relation to their provision for a pension. I think there has been some work done. And certainly there are some categories of members that there potentially could be an adverse impact on. But given that, you know, I couldn't give you a particular person, I wouldn't be doing that anyway. But, you know, I wouldn't be... certainly, I think the 50-50 members, there is potential for those people to be adversely impacted. The second question was around the contribution rate. And... I think there is potential for the employer's contribution rate to go up, given that the accrual rate for members of the scheme is going to improve, so pensions will improve. So potentially out of that, there is the potential for the employer's rate to go up. But that said, I mean, I have no guarantee about that. The scheme would have to be revalued again, probably in order for that to be ascertained, and then council would be advised about that.
Have you enough, Councillor Wilson?
Thanks for that there. I know in terms of the triennial reviews that take place, was every 3 years, is it? And then a year down the line before we find out the results of them. So, you know, when the next one's done, you know, potentially the scheme could be in a better place or worse place. And I see essentially the argument of the potential, but I suppose not making these changes, you know, are still the potential, given that, you know, a lot of Nilgoss's money is invested in stocks and shares, so it is subject to the markets, and not making these changes in no way prevents, I suppose, the potential for the employer's contributions going up in the future. And I suppose from my looking at it, I suppose I welcome in that I suppose there's benefits essentially there for members at this time. And potentially, you know, in the next time this is done, the changes could be made again, and we might be back up to 149th, but at least during that time that members would have benefited from larger accrual rates. So I think that in terms of the council's response, it's quite a cautious one, but I think that we should be welcoming but yes, raising concerns and seeking assurances from Nilgoss, but I think there needs to be more emphasis on welcoming the new benefits at this time. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for your comments. Councillor Webb?
My question was something similar, but in relation to those, I think, who have final salary in the scheme, there would still be people who would be entitled to that. How would this impact on them? And have we any indication from Nilgoss as to what the cost to council would be if there was a 1% or a 2% or a 3% increase in the employer's contribution?
Chair, if I could maybe answer the second part of that. A 1% increase would equate to about £240,000 additional cost to council, which is about 0.5% on rates.
In terms of the first question and the final salary scheme, I suppose those employees who were here or have been here in the longer term will enjoy the benefits of that. The career average started in 2015, I think. So in terms of how this would impact, I suppose, you know, I haven't done the calculations. As I said before, it's all kind of personal to the individual in terms of their circumstances. So, you know, that calculation hasn't been done. Certainly, the accrual rate certainly will improve, you know, people's pensions at the end of the day, that's for sure.
Alderman Smith, and then I'll come back to you, Councillor Wilson. Alderman Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Again, as we all would welcome the benefits, but I would, as earlier raised there, about the cost to council of £240,000 at 1%. Again, has that been factored into our estimates then for next year, if it is brought in?
Any increase in cost to council would not impact in 1920. It would be, you know, the years following that. So, you know, the example that John gave in terms of the value of that wouldn't be impacting in our budgets in 1920. So, therefore, we don't need to make provision for that.
No, okay. just Chair, if I remember in the old council, we had a black hole. We had, I think, £250,000 to put into it, I think, at that time for pension. Would that be correct, Mr. Bomber?
Sure, Alderman Smith's memory is much better than mine. So it's...
Okay, thank you. Councillor Wilson?
Thanks very much. Ed thought the career average scheme came in with the changes in 2012, and for those in the 10-year protection band who are still final salary schemed, that in terms of like Citizens Impact, it shouldn't impact them negatively. If that just like, know if that's correct or not, or my take on that.
We need to check that, Councillor Wilson. Well, we have enough, Councillor McGuire.
Thank you, Chair. If I could just make a couple of comments. What year and a half ago, we had a presentation at the National Association of Councillors from Nilgoss. And there is a black hole in the Nilgoss pension scheme. This seems to me another methodology of trying to put more money into it to offset that black hole. The question I would ask and suggest we add to the council's response is, can they assure us that there is no intended increase in employees' pension contributions? We know that there's going to be a 1% increase in ER next year. This may create increases in future years, but I would like any response to include an assurance or a request for an assurance that there is no anticipated increase in employees' contributions to the pension scheme. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Can that be done in there? Yeah. Any other comments, members? Do we have a proposal that the draft response be approved with those thoughts added in? Councillor McWilliam? Thank you. Do we have a seconder? Councillor Webb?
A second.
Are we all agreed? Okay, members, moving on then to items for noting. 5.1 is the Northern Ireland Local Government Association, and we'll just bring Sandra in.
Thank you, Chair. So very briefly, the work plan for 1920 for NILGA is within your papers, and what the organisation want to do is to run coordinated programmes to develop, promote and protect council using a partnership approach. They want to get involved in terms of issues like devolution, attracting new investment, developing our elected members and new models of investment and best practice. So the work plan has been developed in consultation with senior officers and councillors, including those from this council. They would report back on the results in June against targets that had been set, and they indicate that there will be no increase in our subscriptions for 19-20. They're going to be retained at the 18-19 level. So the report is for noting.
Thank you, Sandra. Councillor Bingham?
May we require any, Chair?
Thank you. Councillor Garvin?
Seconded.
All agreed, members? Mm-hmm. Okay, enough. Item 5.2 then is the prompt payment performance. And again, we'll bring Sandra in.
Thank you, Chair. So within your papers then is our performance report on prompt payments for quarter three. And I suppose, unfortunately, the percentage of invoices paid within the 30 and the 10-day period have decreased from quarter two into quarter three. We believe that that is due to a time lag, due to the issues that we had during the summertime, and those issues are laid out on the second page of a report in relation to some prolonged absence that there was within the accounts payable section, and also some issues that we had around the software within the finance section. Both of those issues have now been addressed in terms of we have cover within the accounts payable section, and that cover now is fully trained in terms of the processing of invoices, and our software system is now more robust in terms of our server and the data that's held there. So despite the fact that the percentages have declined, we're confident that we're at the bottom of that area, and that we will still start to show improvements going forward. Within the report then, on page number three, we also provide you with some information in relation to disputed invoices. That was part of our conversation at the November 2018 committee, and really it was around what impact disputed invoices would have on our statistics. So you will see there the outline of the work that we did in January of this year in relation to disputed invoices. As we indicated at that time, there is no mechanism within our system to mark invoices as disputed. This process had to be done entirely outside of the system by our staff. So what it indicated was that out of the 1,168 invoices that were registered at the 7th of January, 93 of those were identified by officers in dispute, and then there was another 26 identified by the finance section. So a total of 119 invoices out of 1,168 invoices being in dispute. And if we committed those to our statistics, it would improve our percentages by 1%. So I suppose what I would be saying to you is that there was a significant amount of effort put into that process in January to get those figures. It doesn't substantially change the percentages. And I suppose if we were to do that again, we would be using resource to do that, because, as I say, there is no mechanism within our system to deal with that. I suppose on the positive side, what I can say to you is that all of our entry of invoices is now up to date. Any invoice that's received in council yesterday will be on our systems today. We are also escalating the process of getting registered invoices pushed through our system in terms of approvals, and we are getting involved in a process with our heads of service and our directors to ensure that they're aware of which areas that we need to target to get invoices processed, authorised and back to us to get paid more quickly. And what we would like to do is put our resources into that process, I suppose, as opposed to looking at the disputed invoices. And again, I suppose, in terms of the financial system itself, the one that we've got at the minute, the total mobile system, is coming to the end of its shelf life, and we are looking at new financial software for the council. And as part of that process, we would look at putting in our specification, the criteria allowing us to mark disputed invoices automatically within our system, that would allow us to get this information more easily. So that's where we are, really, in relation to this particular performance indicator. I would hope to be coming back with some better information on the next quarter when I'm reporting to committee. However, I don't think that we will meet our targets of 90% for 30 days and 80% for 10 days.
Okay, thank you, Sandra. Councillor Webb.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, members may recall it was actually me who asked for this information, because I was concerned that in our role of governance that we had an element of invoices that we weren't getting information on. And I just want to thank Sandra and John. I had a meeting with them earlier this evening, and they satisfactorily explained to me that not only now is there a better procedure in place to ensure that the invoices are paid within the time limit, and that's going to be worked on and monitored. The disputed invoices, you know, we now know there are 119 at that quarter, but the amount compared to the total is quite small. And the amount of monies is 60 or 65,000, I think, John explained to me. So it is relatively small, but what concerned me, and the reason I asked for it, was it was unknown to us when we were getting these reports. However, I'm happy now that things are in place, and I accept that you know, to proceed to continually do this and give us a report is going to be a big draw on resources, and in fact will impact on our ability to improve the payment within the 30 and 10 days. And therefore, I'm happy that there's no need to continue with this. But we may revisit it, hopefully, if we're all back here after 2nd of May. It's certainly something that needs to be kept in check, because there are a lot of traders out there that are relying on prompt payment. And unfortunately, we've fallen behind, but hopefully it will improve.
Okay, thank you for your comments, Councillor Webb. Alderman Smith.
Thank you, Chair. It's unfortunate that the table sort of reflects very badly in the four or five quarters there. Like, we went from 80% down to 58% on a general decline as such, so it's not very good, unfortunately. I did see in the digital report that we have this great software and stuff, so a bit concerned that we're now looking for more software to fix the problem, really. So maybe somebody can clarify where we're at with it, really.
Through the Chair, the software that's in the digital report is optical character recognition, which is used within the finance department to streamline the processing of invoices. With any new software system that we have, that would still be in place, so it's not as though it's redundant. It is working for a percentage of our invoices. John, do you want to explain just how it works?
Sure, just very briefly. When an invoice comes in, we try and get all our invoices in through email. And when that invoice comes in, the system recognises which supplier it has come from and will populate all the data that the ladies and accounts would have manually input previously. So it saves around about 2 minutes per invoice in terms of the processing time. We process about 60% of our invoices in that fashion. So really it makes the whole process much more efficient. So an invoice can come in, and if it's matched to the purchase order and the delivery has been done, it can really go through the system untouched. There could be no manual intervention from when it comes in to when it's paid.
Well, with respect, Chairman, our Chair, that's not really showing up in the figures as such, so it doesn't really work in terrible well then, but I would have thought now, so it needs to be maybe looked at again.
Okay, Councillor Garvin.
Thank you, Chair. Really for information, through my job outside of council, we've recently gone through a process of automation through robotics, and there's external companies that actually came and identified areas where certain processes could be automated, and it doesn't necessarily have to be with a certain type of software, but they were able to create robots basically that ran jobs during the nighttime when people were out, and then whenever you come in, reports are ready, things are done that would take time for people to do during the day. Maybe that's something that the council could maybe look at in the future, because I know that it has saved a lot of time and created a lot of resource in our company as well.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to, any comments? Or John?
Yes, and thank you for that. Sandra said we're starting to look at new financial software that goes across all of our finance offering through, you know, payroll, paying people, debtors, reporting to officers, and a lot of the new software out there is doing exactly that. It's trying to make our processes much more efficient, and we're looking forward to implementing all of them.
Thank you for that. Councillor Dunlop.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick question, really. Is the same software used in the council billing their customers?
Can you repeat that again, Councillor Dunlop?
Is the same software used to bill our customers, i.e., you know, the users of...
Yeah. Yes, through the Chair, yes. I mean, we have a creditors module. So the debtors module is used to invoice the customers of council, yes?
No, it's just the reason I'm bringing it up. As a user of a group, the invoice is usually pretty prompt.
Great. We like efficiency. That's a good news story. Thank you. Are we all agreed, members? Do we have a proposal that the report be noted? Councillor Webb?
Move it be noted.
Thank you. Councillor Garvin?
Seconded.
Happy enough? Okay, item 5.3 then, the Digital Projects Progress Report. Sandra, you're being kept on your toes tonight.
Just very briefly, this is an update report. The previous report was brought in September, so we have got 15 digital projects completed and 15 on track for completion. Some information there around the telephony solution, and we would hope to use the data that's coming out of the telephony solution now, which is embedded, to allow us to get more meaningful management information and therefore improve our use of resources in that particular area. In terms of the Citizens app and the website development, there was demonstration given to you at the last P&G committee. So work is continuing on those. The website is out for consultation at this point in time and going live tomorrow.
Next week, actually, with a glitch.
And we will be coming back to you then at the next committee on the 5th of March in relation to the update on those two particular developments. But happy to take questions on the report.
Thank you, Sandra. Councillor McWilliam.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Just in relation to the telephone system, we have been given telephone numbers and extensions for different officers. And when we phone now, that doesn't work. So do we all need issued with new numbers, new extensions? We are automatically put through to either Antrim or Mosley Mill, and they put us through. When we ring the number what we used to do and put the extension, it doesn't work, or else it's me that's doing something wrong.
Yeah, we'll look into that. Councillor McWilliam? Councillor Webb?
Could I just ask, Chair, in relation to the Citizens app, where it says that it'll be available to us on the 5th of March, what about other members? Are we piloting this?
Initially, it was to the members of this committee for you to have a look at it and just to see what it feels like before it would go on more general release.
You're now yap tonight. Any other comments? There's a recommendation that the report be noted.
Move it be noted, Chair.
Councillor Hamill, thank you. Councillor McGill?
Seconded, Chair.
All agreed? Okay, item 5.4 is the draft estimates update 2019-2020. There is a recommendation that the report be noted. Councillor Webb?
Chair, could I congratulate staff in achieving what we set them to do as a task, 0.99%. Obviously, we'll all have an opportunity to comment on this fuller when we set the rate, but I'm sure it wasn't an easy task in bringing costs down to achieve that level. So well done, and I propose it be noted.
Thank you. Do you have a seconder?
Seconded, Chair.
Oh, thank you. All agreed, members? Okay, item 5.5 then is the agency staff update. There is a recommendation that the report be noted. Any comments? Alderman Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Just it's good to see the numbers coming down there, but I see in the covering vacancies until structures filled, 19 receptionists, no clock and stuff like that there. So the drivers, two site drivers, operators recycling, and driver site operators recycling. Do we not have HGV drivers that could do those jobs, or anger? That we have to bring agency into it?
So maybe just take the first point, Alderman Smith. There are some posts in that category that have recently been filled, but just won't be reflected because they haven't been filled in that time period. So some of those posts have been filled in January. So you'll see the benefit of that and the reduction next month. In relation to the, can I just ask you again about the question to do with the HGV drivers?
I think we have some HGV drivers at Mossley Mill End. And could they not fill some of these roles?
Yes, you're quite right. We do have up in CSD in Newton Abbey, Alderman Smith, yes. So Michael and Darren Purdy, who's the operations manager, they are using, at the moment I understand it, that they're using them specific to bulky waste commercial runs at Newton Abbey. They're in the process of merging the teams to one depot, which would be in Antrim. So until that point, we're hoping to be quite close to that. Until that point, we're using agency staff for any vacancies on the Antrim runs. There might be some actually that do help out, but at the minute they're working towards the amalgamation of the teams so that in good time they're going to be housed in ESD in Antrim.
Have enough, Alderman Smith? Do we have a... Councillor Wilson?
Thank you. Just a question. It says that the table above excludes the limited ad hoc agency cover. Would just like to have an idea of kind of numbers each month or in December in particular, and maybe an idea of the number of days that were carried out by agency staff on the ad hoc basis. Thanks.
We'll have a look at that, Councillor Wilson, and we'll report back. Any other comments, or do we have a proposer? Or seconder? Councillor McGill and Councillor Garvin?
Proposed, Chair.
Thank you. All agreed, members? 5.6, then, is the managing attendance update, and we'll bring Andrea in.
Thank you, Chair. So, members, this report is really for the period April to December 2018, and it is flagging that we are off target by 0.34 days. When we look at the reasons that lie behind that, it does relate to the long-term absence, and specifically, there's a direct correlation to the absence amongst the 22 cases that we have had in that period that relate to grievance and discipline cases.
So when we compare that to the same level of cases of that nature the previous year, it has doubled. And so those absences that relate to that increase have taken us off our target, unfortunately. We did realise quite a significant reduction last year, members, specifically because we did target and review the management of long-term sickness, and we had a fairly set of training sessions delivered for line managers to help them manage long-term absence. So we are continuing to work through those related disciplinary and grievance cases and manage each of those. We may well still come in on target. We don't know. There is a very small deviation from target, and it will be something that we keep under close review. We did have some very positive uptake for the initiative that the members recently supported, which was the introduction of the flu jab, if you remember, the last time we reported. So that was very welcome by staff, and it was well received. There was quite an uptake. And it's something that we'll always continue looking at in terms of the supports we can put in place. On the positive end, the 100% attendance rates have increased as at the end of December, so it's up 2% on the previous year. So that's the level of employees that don't have a single day of absence. So I suppose, you know, to reassure you, we are managing the top three reasons for absence, and this council and our members have been very supportive of a fairly significant programme of health and wellbeing, and I just wanted to report the reason for the increase and assure you that we will see each of those cases through, each of the 22 grievance and disciplinary cases, and at the same time manage the absence that sit alongside those.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. Alderman Smith.
Thank you, Chair. Disappointing figures again, but again, we had a report at operations last night, and members of council were very content. So it's disappointing to see that it's reflected in the long-term sickness, really. So, but again, there were very heartening figures last night we received now. So,
okay, thank you. Councillor McGuire.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Andrea, for highlighting the difficulty, especially with the long-term sick, going from 11 to December 2017 to double to 22 in December 18 is very concerning. Can I just ask, obviously you can't name names, but of those 22 cases, are those people still employed, or have some of them at least now left unemployment? You do say you're managing long-term absence. I seem to remember a different meeting where some of those people were let go for one reason or another, i.e. they were no longer employees. Is that still the case of that 22, or have some of them left since December, and therefore they won't affect figures later on this year?
To answer your question, Councillor McGuire, it's a combination. So the majority would certainly still be in employment with the council. That, you know, may change depending on the outcome of some of the disciplinary cases, because disciplinaries can range from minor issues of conduct to major. And so the council's response would be proportionate to, you know, the seriousness of the case. So usually if it's in the higher end of misconduct in terms of serious, then obviously there is the potential for termination of contract, accounting for any mitigating circumstances.
Okay, thanks, Andrea. Councillor McGill.
Thanks, Chair. Just on that sliding scale that you were mentioning there on the disciplinary procedure front, does that equate to the time frame that procedures run through, or is it a case that more minor disciplinary matters take less time and therefore wouldn't have as much impact? Or is it the same procedure regardless of the seriousness of the disciplinary matter?
Through you, Chair. Yes, Councillor Maguire, there would be generally a correlation between the gravity of the issue and the length of time that it would take to investigate it. So there can often be a trend with serious or gross misconduct and the duration of an investigation and the complexity that you would often find with those cases. And so before it would go, you know, for consideration, we would put a considerable amount of time into that piece of work to make sure that the council has all the information that it needs before someone is actually considering a future employment contract in relation to an employee. And then quite often beyond that point, there would be the appeal stage. And again, that's part of considering any additional or new information that would come forward. And if there is anything to be investigated at that stage before the appeal is heard, then we would put effort and time into understanding that. And once the decision is made following the consideration of an appeal, that would be final. Yeah.
Okay, any other Councillor Wilson?
Thanks very much, Chair. I haven't seen the Council's disciplinary policy, but I'd suspect that, like a lot of employers, there isn't time limits for the employer, but there's likely to be time limits for the employee in terms of what they have to adhere to in terms of returning comments and any investigation minutes. I think what would be helpful and what I've called for in other employers and would be calling for this employer would be to consider as part of the next disciplinary policy review to incorporate time frames for the employer to complete their investigation, because in terms of delays and processes, the longer investigations go on, the more likelihood a staff member is likely to go off on long-term sick or on sickness absence given the stress they are under. And if, I suppose, if investigations and whatever else drags on and there's no real time frame for the employer to commit to, things that aren't done as quickly as possible, it can exacerbate that situation and see people unnecessarily going off. But I do appreciate that the employer has limited resources to get these investigations, I suppose, carried out and conducted as quickly as they would like to, but I think it's at least something we should be looking at, as we should be aspiring to have timeframes within the disciplinary policy for the employer. Thanks.
Chair. So, Councillor Wilson, in relation to your points, we could certainly take a look at that. From experience, the delays have actually related to employees responding and engaging in the process. So quite often it would trigger an absence that would be categorised as stress-related, and it's hard then to establish the link with them and the engagement to start the process and then stay with it until it's concluded. So we have certainly learned how to do that as an employer in terms of what's reasonable and what to allow in those circumstances. And then when it becomes unreasonable and the employer then has to press ahead with the information that is available to it. So there's a balance there. But in my experience, the delays have related more often to those set of circumstances than to the investigation taking an undue time for other reasons.
Right. I'd say it's disciplinary policy, but I should have said it was the grievance policy. So somebody essentially having their grievance heard and investigated in as quick a time as possible, and for any subsequent investigation to be conducted in as quick a time, and for time frames to be set and associated with that policy. My apologies for the confusion.
Thank you, Councillor Wilson. Any other comments, members, or do we have a proposal that it's noted? Anyone? Councillor, thank you, Councillor McWilliam and Councillor McGill.
Seconded.
Okay, members all agreed? 5.7 then is NJC pay scales, and again we'll bring Andrea in.
Thank you, Chair. So members, this is by way of update to just report that the National Joint Council has advised the Council and all other councils in the UK of the new pay spine that is effective from the 1st of April 2019, and it's to ensure that the Council and all the councils meet the government's requirement to have the minimum hourly rate at £9 for all workers over the age of 25. So we're well on track to make sure that that's in place, and we're working with our good colleagues in payroll. So it's just to let you know and reassure you that that's all on track and will be effective from the 1st of April. And it was all built into the estimates process and the budgets for salaries.
That's great, Andrea. Thank you. It's recommended that the report is noted. Councillor Garvin?
Noted, Chair.
Councillor Wilson? Okay, all agreed, members? Thank you. Can we have a proposer and seconder to take the remainder of council business in committee, please? Councillor Garvin?
So proposed.
Councillor McWilliam? Yes. Thank you. We'll now move into committee and the audio recording will cease at this point. Proposer and seconder to move out of committee, please? Councillor McGill?
So proposed.
Thank you. And Councillor McWilliam? Thank you, members. The audio recording will now restart. Item number 7 then is any other relevant business? Okay. Thank you, members. That draws a close the Policy and Governance Committee meeting of Antrim and Newton Abbey Borough Council on Tuesday the 5th of February 2019. Please make sure your microphones are switched off. Thank you.